Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name is Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my business partner, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone.
Today we're sharing with you our top fat loss tips. But before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a five-star review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this one's titled Amazing Research and Truth by Jay Jailers. I've been following Amanda on Instagram for a couple years now. It was one of the suggestions after following so many coaches. I have absolutely loved her inspiration for meal preparation and simple at-home workouts. I just recently started listening to the podcast because I've hit a plateau with my fitness journey. However, after listening to everything in their podcast, I found new ways to stay on track, but most importantly, ways not to sabotage my own goal. Love that recent podcast. I've even shared this podcast with my roommate and my mom and anyone who listened to me talk about it. Thank you guys so much for making me feel not alone in this health journey. All this information is truly helpful and reassuring. Well, it's a beautiful thing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that review. It means so much to Chris and I. We really read all of the reviews and you are definitely not alone. So keep sharing that. It really helps support our podcast. Mm-hmm. Getting into today's episode, we're talking all about fat loss and healthy ways to achieve those goals. Now, we really don't want you to obsess over your weight, but we understand that it's absolutely a healthy goal to have. So we want to share what are the healthy ways to achieve that goal and really how to optimize, because there's a difference between just losing weight and really optimizing your fat loss. So again, the difference between losing more muscle mass versus really focusing on losing fat over some of that muscle and just giving you an edge when it comes to losing weight.
Yeah, we've had a couple podcasts or several podcasts in the past where we're talking about one specific thing and then we touch on fat loss, but I don't think we've done one podcast on fat loss. So we just want to compile all that information, give you a little bit of bonus on top, and that way it's all concise and consolidated into one episode.
Absolutely. And don't feel like you need to implement all of these tips. We're really going to give you like, you know, a lot of what we use in our toolbox, but just use the ones that work for you because we're going to give you a lot today.
Yeah, it's literally just to plant the seed and get you thinking about these things as you go about your day, and hopefully some small changes will be made.
And so I wanted to talk to you about some ways to measure success because we don't want you to become overly consumed with the scale. Now, we think it's a great tool and can definitely be helpful for measuring your success. But overall, you know, we want to give you a couple options when it comes to what to look out for on this journey. So a few things you can use to measure your success is one, how are you doing at achieving that specific goal, right? Like if it's more about nutrition, you know, are you being consistent? If it's about getting movement, you know, track that in a journal and focus on that goal. Because again, your weight will fluctuate some. You just want to see a downward trend overall. Like what's your weight on your weekly average? Now, other ways to also measure success would be, how are you feeling overall, including energy levels? How are your clothes fitting? You know what I mean? Are they fitting you better? You know, are they looser in some areas, but tighter in the areas you want? You can also use a tape measurer, so you can measure your circumference in a couple different areas. You can look that up online on like the best places to take measurements, so you don't have to rely on just the scale. And then again, like I said, if you record your weight every day, look at like the weekly average about. So don't be so attached to the number every single day. Like your mood shouldn't be dependent on the number on the scale. That's not a healthy attitude. We do not encourage that. And we want you to feel good overall and feel motivated. Mm-hmm. Now, another tip just to set the table that in order to lose weight, you do need to be in a moderate calorie deficit. Some people would refer to this as energy balancing. So if you hear about energy balancing, it's also, you know, how do you balance your calories and your activity level to help you achieve your goals? And today we're talking fat loss, but you know, you would need a calorie surplus to put on muscle and then calorie maintenance level to maintain your weight.
Right.
And on top of that, another reminder is you don't want to go too low calorie. It's not that it necessarily won't help you lose weight, but what will happen is you'll most likely hurt compliance. I mean, it's not healthy and it could cause you to binge later, right? If you're going like too low calories.
Yeah. And we'll get into some other aspects of what can happen physiologically in terms of hormonal imbalances, changes that occur. We'll get into that when we get into the tips. But real quick, because she was talking about calories in, calories out, and the whole balance between that, we should briefly discuss basal metabolic rate and total daily energy expenditure, because those are two things that you're going to want to know if you're going to be tracking macros and calories. and knowing where you need to be at, because she was saying you don't want to be in too much of a calorie deficit, right? Well, you need to know what your calorie maintenance level is to know what your deficit should be. So one of those two things is the basal metabolic rate, which is basically the amount of energy your body burns while you're at rest. Okay, so that's just your baseline. And then to get your total daily energy expenditure, you add an activity factor on top of that. So this is like how much movement you go around your day, your workout routine, all that kind of stuff. So you're going to want to know those two things, and your total daily energy expenditure is your baseline. That's your maintenance level. And then, I guess that's tip number one. So we might as well just move right into that, which is Okay. Start tracking your calories and macros. And one of the things that you can do is go to an online calculator, because they have tons of those. There's dozens of sites for free online BMR and TDEE calculators. And you can even, you know, put your goal in there that say fat loss, muscle gain, maintenance, and it'll spit that out for you and add an additional, some calculators are different, and they'll add like 20% for like a 20% increase for weight gain and 20% reduction in calories for fat loss. Some will do 15, some will do 10. You just got to calculate that yourself. But honestly, what you really should do is just factor in the total daily energy expenditure, and then you determine the percentage in which you want to go into a deficit. So I always recommend to go at 15 just to be safe, you know, maybe even less, depending on where they are in terms of like excess body fat and how much they have.
Yeah. I do like 15 because it maybe gives you a little extra buffer if you're not like, you know, if you're a little bit off on your calories or something.
It kind of depends on your level of discipline, in my opinion, you know, and how well you're going to stay on it every day and whether or not you're going to fluctuate. I personally like to remind people to just keep in mind that this is a long average, that obviously it's a daily battle, but you want to look at it in terms of your overall balance at the end of the week. And so it's a long game.
Right.
You know, it's not this short term thing that you want to turn around and you're like, oh, I was in a deficit yesterday and I haven't seen any difference. You know, it's like that doesn't work like that. You have to train your body. Your body needs to recognize that long deficit, and then you'll start seeing some changes. So you got to be patient.
Right. So Chris is really good at calculating macros and calories and giving recommendations. So if you don't feel comfortable with the different online services, you can definitely email Chris. His email is on his Instagram, Chris Rocchio, or you can check it out on our website, masteryourhealth.net. So that's a great option if you're worried about which way to go and how long to stick to it and all that stuff. You know, it's a service we provide with our coaching.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a little shameless plug. But anyway, so one of the things that we do, I mean, obviously you don't have to track both right away. Some people start just tracking macros. Some people start just tracking calories. But the main thing is just start getting an idea of where you're at in the day. You know, I mean, that would be the number one thing. Even before you calculate, just see where you're at right now and just do it. It doesn't take that long, a little bit extra time looking stuff up. This stuff is readily available. There's apps to help you with it, like MyFitnessPal, stuff like that. So definitely start tracking, writing things down. And while you're at it, you might as well write down things that cause discomfort and things like that, because you could be dealing with intolerances and things like that. So while you're tracking, track everything, anything that makes you feel like crap, anything that makes you crash in energy during the day. You definitely don't want to follow and continue those eating patterns. So in general, the tip is just start tracking. Whatever way and metric you want to start using, just pick one and go after it and do a little bit of research. And what you find when you're tracking calories and macros is that obviously everything comes with a specific serving size. So you start training your brain to look at things in terms of serving sizes. And within that is the idea of portion control. So you want to just start doing that. And all these things are under the umbrella of tracking. And so within that, just start controlling your portions, and sometimes a little bit of measurement on the shorthand. You don't need to do it every time, because you can start memorizing what your favorite foods are and what the portions are going to be and stuff like that. So the whole idea is to do it at the beginning and get to a point where you no longer have to track it, because it's part of your daily routine. It's part of your nutrition plan. It's not this temporary diet that you're going on. We'll get into that later, but you want this to be a permanent, sustainable system. So being consistent with this being a short-term habit, say for you do it for 2 months, it's just going to be embedded into your brain from that point on.
Right. And not like in an obsessive way, just also like you'll start to understand like, oh, like certain fruits are like about this serving size and certain proteins are about this serving size. So you'll start getting a general idea and then, you know, you won't have to feel so obsessive.
Yeah. One of the main things that stood out to me when I started doing this is how much of a small serving size of dried fruit, how much of a sugar pack that is. So, and I love dried fruit. I love raisins, goji berries, and just anything under the sun. So dried cherries. So that's one of the main things I have to control, because I can put back a bag of that before even, you know, without even thinking. So,
yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, it may not be for everyone. We'll give you some other options later on of different ways you can get to portion control, but you know, Chris and I have both done this and we find it very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to tip number two, and that would be to eat less refined foods, refined carbs, you know, highly processed foods, and more whole foods. So you're subbing in more one ingredient foods. So processed foods are hyper palatable. They have empty calories and they really aren't that satisfying. And, you know, all these additives, I can tell, like, you know, I can go through a bag of chips way easier than I'd go through like, you know, some blueberries or, you know, some more protein filling foods.
Like a bag of baby carrots.
Yeah, you know, you're not like eating that bag of baby carrots like, oh my goodness. But it can still be really satisfying. So, you know, switching to more whole foods will allow you to actually lower your calories naturally. So this is one hack where maybe you start doing this and you really don't want to start, you know, with tracking calories and macros. You could start with this and you'll find that you end up eating less if you are eating a lot of processed foods. So a nice suggestion for beginners starting out, I think we've mentioned this before, is the 80-20 rule. And that would be about 80% whole foods and 20% fun foods. It's not a math equation. It's really supposed to be more like an easy guideline for beginners. I like that mindset in general. It leaves room for treats and all that without having to stress out that much.
Mm-hmm.
To back up what I'm saying, in a 2019 randomized controlled trial, diets with a lot of ultra processed foods cause extra calorie intake, which in turn led to weight gain, unlike a more unprocessed food diet. So again, they're showing that in studies, without really having to track calories and macros, you'll naturally eat less.
Right.
Also, to add to also just being a healthier person, another 2019 study in the American Medical Association linked an increase in consumption of ultra-processed food with a higher risk of all-cause mortality. Now, again, this is one of those association studies, so we have to take that with a grain of salt, but it's, again, indicating that ultra-processed foods has a negative impact on health and a negative impact on weight gain. So something to consider when planning your overall diet.
And yeah, that switch alone can help you reduce your calorie intake naturally without even having to track like we were talking about before. So that brings us to tip number three, and that is eating healthy fats. And so obviously, you know, starting in the mid-1900s, going to the late 1900s, the trend was to avoid fat and to, you know, you had your margarines and all these other things to have lower fat butter substitutes, and everybody was afraid of it. And that mindset seems to persist even to today, even though people know about healthy fats, but there's still this fear because they think that eating fat makes you fat.
And I mean, it makes sense, right?
Seriously. I mean, it's one of those things where it's a very easy, what somebody would say is a linear, logical conclusion.
It sounds right.
Right, but that's not the case. So fats are energy dense and they offer about 9 calories per gram compared to carbs and proteins, which are only about 4 calories per gram. They can also be very satiating depending on the type. So adequate portions can leave you feeling a little bit more satiated and full and all that kind of stuff.
Right. I mean, picture a salad, you know, without any fats in it. I just feel like a salad alone can be a lot more filling, obviously with a combination of like protein and fat. But you see that typical sad salad with lettuce, tomato, onion, cucumber, and like some fat-free dress. That is the most unsatisfying combination versus adding in, you know, either some nuts or even some like, you know, fermented cheese and then some protein. That is a much more filling combination when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also want to keep your body used to burning fat for energy. So if your body is used to this higher carb, lower fat diet, you're going to be primed to run on carbs. Your brain is always going to be looking for quick sources of energy. And what you really want to do is train your body for that metabolic flexibility in terms of conditioning your body to burn fat for energy. And this will also allow your brain to avoid that brain fog that comes from the sugar crash. You know, you like you eat that big lunch. Say you work that 9 to 5 and you only get one big lunch break, and then you eat this huge meal, and then around 3 o'clock that sugar crash comes, right? Well, that happens a lot to people in high carb, lower fat diets, because when your body's not trained to tap into fat stores when the sugar's not there, it's just gonna leave you in that deficit of energy.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to have the balance. And like I said, that metabolic flexibility. And to top it off, fats provide the raw materials to manufacture important fat burning hormones, as well as body composition hormones like HGH and testosterone, which even girls need, despite the, you know, thinking that you only need estrogen and testosterone. You have both. And you do need it to retain lean muscle, while especially in a calorie deficit, because your body is going to want to deteriorate and break down muscle in that situation, because fat is, you know, it's survival mechanism. So,
right.
And the hormones that are related to fat burning are designed to increase the rate in which your body breaks down fat and boost your metabolism.
Nice.
So if you decrease the amount of fat you consume, you're also decreasing the hormones and the amounts in which they are produced by the body.
Obviously, if you're eating too many fats, you know, that will lead you to go over your calories. So that will also cause you to gain weight. So we're not encouraging that. But the deal is, you do not want to go too low fat. It provides a ton of hormonal benefits. It's good for brain health, all of that stuff. So make sure you're getting healthy fats in your diet.
Well, I know there's been many a day that I've grabbed one too many handfuls of like cashews or pistachios.
No,
or something
it's the
like
peanut
that.
Butter that gets you. It's not really the nuts.
Well, regardless, it's in that category.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I do think it's also a helpful tip that sometimes raw nuts aren't as easy to overconsume versus a nut butter.
Absolutely.
Maybe a little bit easier to overconsume. So pay attention to that and either watch your portion, or maybe, you know, if you find yourself going in for too many scoops of peanut butter, to switch to like whole nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So to add to the list of like what some other healthy fats are, we've got salmon, steak, eggs, nuts, avocado, extra virgin olive oil, cacao dark chocolate, olives. Chris likes his olives because he's Italian.
Mm-hmm. That's not the only reason.
All the good stuff. Moving on to tip number 4, it would be to make sure you're eating high protein with plenty of produce and fiber. So a great way to start your day off is with a high protein breakfast, right? This goes in the face of conventional breakfast, which is like a sugar bomb. Like mm-hmm. even the healthier cereals, like, I mean, there are some better ones nowadays, but quote unquote, like even Raisin Bran is.
Well, that wouldn't be considered a healthier cereal.
No, but I mean, I feel like back in the day, everyone was like, oh, Raisin Bran.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like definitely was thought to be healthier. But now you can really see like 1-2 cups of Raisin Bran is a total sugar bomb with some milk. So it's not a bad dessert, actually, if you want that as your dessert. But I'm assuming when you're starting your day off with that, you're not thinking dessert.
Especially since this is a fat loss episode, that's not conducive to your goal.
Absolutely. So don't start your day off with sugary cereal. Think of some high protein breakfast. You know, it could be eggs, which you can make a million different ways.
Steak and eggs. Don't be afraid.
Scrambled eggs, an omelet, all that stuff. You could do a really nutrient dense protein shake. That's another good option. Greek yogurt with some berries. So you got a couple options in there. And add a serving of veggies at breakfast, which is, you know, leads me to my other tip, which is eat tons and tons of produce. My favorite part about vegetables is they're low calorie, high fiber. So it's like so it's really hard to overdo vegetables, really.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fruit, you could overdo a little bit more, but it's still really good for you, especially whole fruit. Dried fruit, like Chris said a little earlier, is really easy to overconsume. So go for some of those whole fruit. You'll get the water, vitamins, fiber, all of that.
Yeah. But a little caveat to that is, which we'll talk about later, is you're going to want to avoid spiking your insulin all day. So if you're going to have your fruit and you got to have it, and I insist on having a little bit every day, try to have it after your workout or close to your workout, something like that. You don't want to have it before. You probably want to time it. But this is going to be on the nutrient timing section, but ideally time it after.
So really don't go willy-nilly with the fruit, you know, maybe a serving or two, depending on what your calorie bracket is. And then with the vegetables, we say go willy-nilly with them.
and it kind of depends on the fruit, right? I mean, you're in terms of glycemic levels and sugar intake and stuff like that, like a blueberry is going to be a lot better than
a banana.
Or like mango or something, right?
Yeah. Which again, you can incorporate, especially if you're tracking calories and macros, you get a better idea. But pay attention to the serving size. Elaborating a little bit more on the protein. Protein is very satiating and also will help preserve muscle mass while you're trying to lose weight. So again, optimizing for fat loss. It's not just weight loss, it's fat loss. You know, I'll find myself really craving dessert or something, and then I have a filling meal with a big serving of protein, and I find that I can, like, I barely have room for any dessert.
Yeah, and you'll get a different number in terms of what the recommended amount of protein intake you should be in, especially for in a caloric deficit. Some people say 1 gram per pound of body weight. Some say 1 gram per pound of lean mass. And that pretty much just takes your body weight minus what the fat mass on your body is. But nonetheless, I mean, I would say bare minimum while you're in a calorie deficit, aim to get at least 1 gram per pound of lean mass.
Got it. Good tip. And lastly, to touch more on the fruit, is it is a great option if you're craving dessert. So if you're craving dessert all the time and you really want something sweet, fruit is a great sub in for that. Again, it's not about never having dessert, but in terms of like training your palate, going for that handful of blueberries or eating all the cherries in the fridge, Chris. You didn't leave me any last night?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to retrain my palate, you see, away from the chocolate and the chocolate chips that, like that I told you to hide from me.
You gave me like 2 cherries. No, I'm just kidding. I have another bag somewhere else.
I ate half of them while they were actually sitting in the fridge. So I'm like grabbing into the bag while they're sitting on the shelf. And then I just keep grabbing in the bag. So I was like, I might as well bring them over to the couch and share them because these things are going to be gone in like 5 minutes.
I know, but you were like, do you want some, Amanda? I was like, I don't really feel like them now. Well, you're like, it's now or never.
Yeah. And some of these, honestly, some of these processed foods are literally like scientifically engineered to keep you eating, to make them hyper palatable.
Right.
You know, the ones that you don't have to chew as much.
Yeah.
Those are very easy to overeat. So this kind of trains your taste buds and your brain away from those hyper palatable foods and gets you to more like natural sources of sugar. Because, and which we'll get into a little bit later, but you'll find that changes in your diet bring changes in your gut bacteria. Mm-hmm. And your gut bacteria can actually control cravings. So there's specific strains of gut bacteria that ideally just are always craving carbs. And they send that signal straight to your brains like, hey, go get me carbs. Especially if they have an overabundance. Actually, well, I think I'm dealing with this a little bit right now. I haven't done a panel or anything like that, but because I was going through a weight gain phase and I was doing a lot of sugars throughout the day, like gummy bears. And then I was also taking fruit juice directly after my workout. Like I would drink some pomegranate juice or cherry juice and things like that. So I was giving my body a lot of simple carbs, simple sugars. And I really think that that's controlling my cravings right now. And so I'll be really good throughout the day and then wake up at like 2 a.m. just craving sugar and just zombie walk to the kitchen. I know I talk about this every episode, but that's what I'm dealing with right now. And I really think that this is one of those things where since I don't have the willpower to control it during the day, I'm like, I'm half asleep. My guard is down.
Yeah.
And so just keep an eye on that and keep an eye on those cravings, and which we'll get into a little bit later in the tips and tricks about how we can get ahead of them.
Well, wouldn't we a Master Your Health podcast episode if we didn't bring up your gummy bear addiction, would it?
Or my 2 a.m. trips to the kitchen. So next we have the idea of getting rid of the diet mindset and getting towards the healthy eating mindset or going towards a proper nutrition plan.
Right.
Which I like to say, so don't get on a diet plan, get on a nutrition plan. And so because the worst diet in the world is one that you cannot sustain.
Yeah.
So you have all of these different fads and these things that are promising you to the land of enlightenment and, you know, and the promised land of your goals. Yeah. And so it's like, and so they all promise different things. Well, they all promise the same thing, but a different way to get there. But in my opinion, if you can't sustain it, then it's not the good approach. So you got to pick a plan that is sustainable for you and just go for that. Because obviously, you know, short-term restrictive diets, they lead to short-term weight loss. That's been proven. And we've all seen it. We've all seen the people that get on, like, I'm going to do it. And like 6 weeks into the New Year's resolution, they kill it. And then it plateaus, tapers off. And then you actually may see some subsequent weight gain, like gaining the weight back and things like that. Depending on how long the calorie deficit is, there are certain changes that can go out in your body. But we'll talk about that in a second. And there are some studies that show an overly restricted diet can be a failing strategy. Mm-hmm. And even studies that indicate that dieting can be a consistent predictor of future weight gain.
Wow.
Right. And I have those studies in the show notes. So why is it that they regain weight? I mean, it's not from a lack of of willpower. I mean, they want to do it. They've set a goal for themselves. It's not like they are confused in their goal. They know what it takes to keep the weight off. The knowledge is there. They've been told 1.5 million times that they need to balance their energy, or calories in, calories out, and be in a deficit. So what is it that causes that weight gain? Because they've shown that they've done it before. They've already put the taken the weight off.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's an argument about whether or not it's psychological or purely physiological. There's probably a little bit of both, but we'll look at the possible reasons. So one of the things is living in an obesogenic environment. And what these are environments that encourage unhealthy behaviors, or at least make it hard for you to make healthy choices. So these are cities that make it really difficult to walk to places. Say you live in a rural area.
Yep.
And it's, you know, 4 miles to your nearest shop or anything close to you. So distances between home and necessities being too far is one of the issues. You also have urban areas, what are called food deserts, and some rural areas are called food deserts as well, where the options for affordable and fresh whole foods are limited. And many of the areas will have like one grocery store and 12 freaking fast food spots within any given neighborhood.
Yeah.
So you have all of these options, and you're advertising with bright colors, and then you'll have like one market or one supermarket that has a produce section. But it's just so much easier for people to grab that quick bite for their kids, you know, coming home from work, because you got to think that people in the inner cities, that's a working class. They don't have as much free time as more affluent communities. So they go towards the things that they can get quickly on their lunch breaks and things like that. So that kind of like sums up the food desert aspect, but that's an obesogenic environment.
So what would you say if that's your current environment right now? What can you do?
I mean, honestly, it maybe take a little bit of that time that you get on a weekends, and just go and you have to go to that store, even right. If it takes a little bit out of your time, even if you have to get on a bus and do it. It's there's no other way to do it. I mean, I understand that some people have to work harder for this, for a healthier lifestyle than others. I mean, some people walk into work and there's a gym and healthy foods in the kitchen and things like that. Like,
yeah.
So the difference in the amenities that our different jobs and lifestyles have, it's vast. So unfortunately in this situation, you know, until we get these programs that are set up in the inner cities to eliminate this food desert situation, and it could not even be programs. Maybe you just start seeing an initiative of people in that community start investing in building businesses and actually or starting co-ops. What I saw in St. Louis, what I thought was really great is that when I was living in St. Louis, is that people started community gardens.
Nice.
Which is really good. And it didn't seem that people abused it, you know, in terms of people coming, like say somebody who lives down the street from the garden. I always thought this because I have a tendency to be cynical sometimes.
And you do.
And so I would be like, I cannot think that somebody down the street that put no time and effort into this just comes down in the middle of the night, just swipes all the tomatoes. And it never happened, or at least I didn't notice. So I think you're starting to see more and more of these initiatives, and they're more grassroots. So it's kind of like one of those things that don't wait for it to happen to you. Just make it happen and try to. I mean, I understand that people have their limitations, especially right now, you know, when everything's shut down. But this is one of those situations. Shit, start the garden now, since you know that, you know, you're not going to get any outside help.
Right. And I think that's a good reminder to plan ahead and take the extra time on the weekend if it is a little bit harder for you. And hopefully times will change.
Absolutely. So coming back from my rant, because I know I went off on a little tangent there for a minute, but we're talking about the reason why people regain the weight after they lose it. So calorie deprivation can lead to changes in hormones, metabolism, and even cognitive and attentional functions. And it makes it difficult to continue or restart these behaviors that helped us keep the weight off or bring the weight off to begin with.
Right.
So the cognitive or attentional functions that I mentioned were attributed to this preoccupation with thoughts of food during and after the diet. So their lives revolved around it. And so when you're constantly thinking about it, that's what you're going to be going to. And so if you're bored, you go to the kitchen because you're thinking about food. Even though before you were previously thinking about limiting it, it's still now your preoccupation. So your brain's always going towards it. So I thought that was interesting. And in response to calorie deprivation, your levels of leptin, which is considered your satiety hormone, they decrease. and your levels of ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, increase. And your body can also decrease its energy expenditure, its BMR, in fat oxidation. And we talked about BMR earlier. And so these are what are known as compensatory physiological adaptations. And what they are is your body compensating for what it perceives as starvation. So it makes changes to prevent that in the future. And when you're in that deprived state, so to speak, you experience even more hunger even after eating. And so I mentioned the reduction in energy expenditure before that comes from the prolonged calorie deficit. And this is due to two factors. And first, when the weight is lost, obviously less energy is needed to maintain the body's functions because one of the factors or the determinants of your BMR is your body weight. Second is your metabolism just gets more efficient. It starts realizing that it can't be fast because it can't be burning through all of these calories so quickly because it's not getting as many as it's used to or it needs. So it just slows down and allows the body to survive on less energy than a similar size body would that was not calorie deprived. So in order to be in a caloric deficit after that, you would need to then further reduce your caloric intake to keep losing weight. And going back to the calorie level on which you could previously maintain your weight would then cause weight gain. Does that make sense? So let's just say that your maintenance weight before weight gain, I'm sorry, your maintenance calories before weight loss was 1800 calories.
Right.
And so that was how you're going to maintain your weight. Then let's just say you reduce that down to 1600 for a long period of time. Like, no, let's just say you did unhealthily and you went down to like 1200 calories, which is what like I would recommend somebody like 90 pounds, right? It's such a small amount, right? But nonetheless, let's say you go down for 12 and that's lasting for months and months and months. And then you come back and you're like, okay, I've lost my weight. I'm going to go back to my maintenance weight, or my maintenance calories, and go back to 1800. Well, you're most likely going to gain fat at that point, even though it was previously your maintenance weight. So that's what I mean by that.
Right. So as you lose weight, you kind of need to adjust your calories at some point. Definitely wait a while, but at some point you will need to adjust your calorie level and reset on that.
Yeah. So if you were going to start introducing a higher caloric level after a prolonged deficit, bring it up slowly. You know, so don't just jump back up to say 18 like we were talking about before. Bring it up to 13 and then 14 and then 15.
Right. You want slow and steady weight gain is going to be healthier overall.
Correct.
I mean, you also see this in the bodybuilding community, which what's called reverse dieting. It's basically what you're talking about.
Right. So like we were saying, without knowing about these adaptations that are going on in your body, then which many people don't, what worked before may not work now. And what was shown after a round of the show The Biggest Loser, some contestants maintain these changes in metabolism for 6 years afterwards. But keep in mind, they also lost an average of 128 pounds within 30 weeks.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a lot of weight.
Right. I mean, I do think, what was that show called? The Biggest Loser. I feel like they kind of, in some ways, I mean, they definitely do a lot of healthy things, but because of the competition, like the speed might be a little bit much. I haven't paid that close attention to it. Also, another thing I do see it encourages is not putting on too much muscle, because in the competition, you're trying to lose the most weight possible. So the thought of adding a little bit of weight for muscle is not helpful in that competition. Whereas in real life, you know, you could lose weight and not be afraid to be like, you know, put on some more muscle so your net weight loss is a little bit less.
Yeah, that's why I like to track body composition and rather than weight.
Right, because the tape measure or other ways. Mm-hmm, yep.
Because one of my biggest things for fat loss is weight training. So, but we'll get into that later. So like we said, the dieting mindset, the restrictive mindset is not a long-term winning strategy. And so you want to just develop a plan, and it may take a while to actually settle into that and find what the healthy balance is, right? And that's where the tracking comes in that we were talking about before, the portion control and things. And so there is going to be a little bit of time that it will take to really find the balance. But in our opinion, and what the science says, is that just sustainability is key. That's the number one factor when you want to make any habitual transition.
So that's why overall we recommend the 80-20 mindset when it comes to long-term healthy eating. It's just a great space to be in. But like we said, balance is different for everybody. So find the right balance for you.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to our next tip is about chewing your food and eating mindfully. Those kind of go hand in hand instead of just like swallowing, like what I do sometimes when I'm really hungry, just shove a spoonful of food in my mouth.
Oh, Amanda eating a salad is the funniest thing ever, because she's most of the time, especially when it's lunch, and so her face is buried in her computer. So she'll be like leaning forward, staring at the computer, and then just shoveling this salad in your face, whole big, big mouthfuls, and just chewing it up. And she doesn't know that I'm staring at her and just taking photos.
It's oh, just great. In your head.
Yeah.
Don't follow my example, kids.
Yeah. So that's why. And I'll kind of remind her and be like, hey,
you know, pay attention to yeah. your food. Right. So when you really chew your food slowly, it gives your brain time to fully realize that you're full. Also, when you're eating, not only do you release, you know, helpful hormones in your gut, but also in your mouth. So your mouth has certain enzymes that helps you digest the food before you even get to your stomach. Nonetheless, chewing is a manual form of digestion, right? The smaller you chew your food, the easier it'll be for your stomach to digest. So the combination of all of that is really helpful for losing weight and just feeling very satisfied.
Yeah, it also increases production of hormones like peptide YY and glucagon like peptide 1 after a meal.
And you don't have to take our word for it. There's studies that also back up this whole concept. So one study showed that eating slowly led to decreases in energy intake within meals in healthy women. So you can see right there, it's helpful. There are a few other studies that back up this whole concept. We'll have those in the show notes.
Yeah, keep in mind that distracted eating, such as eating while watching TV or working, tends to make people eat more during that meal. If you are going to do it while you're distracted, just keep it in mind before you're sitting down. Like, hey, just make sure that you're chewing. You know, I know some people cannot get away from working while eating. It's sometimes you're time pressed. Sometimes it's absolutely unavoidable. But just keep this in mind. And like we said, we're going to plant that seed. And hopefully you just catch yourself when you're in the act.
Right. And also just having pre-portioned meals. So maybe that'll be helpful if you do have to work while eating, because then you won't go and get more. But then pay attention to your body and give yourself some time to really enjoy that food.
Mm-hmm. So next on the list is nutrient timing. And nutrient timing refers to certain nutrients that are handled by the body during certain times of the day. And so, for example, certain research shows that carbohydrate tolerance is actually heaviest after exercise. So say you're on a low carb diet and you're doing that to lose fat, but you don't want to completely eliminate carbs because it reduces cortisol, helps you chill out and relax in the evening and things like that. So you don't want to completely go all out unless you're going keto. So if you want to have that one carb meal of the day to replenish glycogen and to make sure you have enough for your workout the next day, then try to time it directly after your workout. And this is especially if you're insulin resistant.
Right.
Like I said, it depends on what your goal is. If you're trying to gain muscle, that's completely different protocol. You know, you'll probably be eating enough carbs the rest of the day to properly replenish glycogen. But in your carb deprived state, but you still want to get a little bit, that would be the strategic way to go about it.
Yep.
And referring to pre-workout nutrition, like we said, you don't want to spike your insulin before your workout, because you have to understand that insulin is the fat storage hormone, and actually the enzymes and the hormones that need to be present in your body for fat to be released from the cell to be burned for energy, insulin cannot be present in the blood. And we're going to talk about that later. So what you're going to want to do is resist the temptation to carb up before your workout. You know, have some protein, fat, maybe a little bit of blueberries, and then save that insulin spike for after your workout and that heavy carb meal. So that would be the best tip for nutrient timing for pre-workout. I'm also a heavy fan of, when you're doing this, taking amino acids during your workout. And it's also really good for lean muscle retention and things like that, performance. Now, there are more hardcore trainers that will tell you if you're on fat loss, and especially if you are, like, say, have excessive weight gain or you're obese, then they would tell you to skip that post-workout carb altogether and maybe just have like some higher carb veggies, you know, like maybe like some peas, tomatoes, things like that, to further work on insulin sensitivity. But in my experience, if you're going from a high carb diet to no carb, that's just a failing strategy.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about before, your body and your brain's not trained for that. You're going to get the brain fog. You're going to give up. You're going to reach for that quick source of energy, especially if you're working, right? If you get that brain fog and you're working and you're having to deal with people you don't like, I mean, we all have that situation. So who wants to be like fighting the crankiness of what's called that keto coma? while they're dealing with all the BS of their day.
Yeah.
So people just abandon that. So like I said, just be a little bit strategic with it. And if you're going to make this change, start incrementally making the change. And that should be more sustainable than the drastic. Yeah. So let's go even further in the timeline and talk about, let's say, your pre-workout meal or your pre-workout nutrition. And your fuel use during the exercise is going to be dependent upon the type of macronutrients consumed beforehand. And this kind of depends because, like, it takes several hours to even tap into food that you eat, you know. So, like, it kind of depends on your timing for the meal. So, for example, a high-carb meal before you exercise is going to spike your insulin, which in turn fuels the workout. But a low-carb, higher-protein, higher-fat meal before exercise will encourage a higher percentage of fatty acids to be used for a fuel source. So that's, like we were talking about, we want to train our body to use the fatty acids for fuel.
Right. So, you know, nutrient timing is a little bit overwhelming to you at first. You know, focus more on the other tips we said earlier and then add this on later on. Or also focus on it, you know, around your workout time. Like, I think that's a great time to really focus and start involving nutrient timing on a few things that Chris mentioned.
Absolutely. Which brings us into Amanda was going to talk about managing stress, and she's better at it than I am.
So when it comes to stress, if you're chronically stressed all the time, right, not acute stress, but chronically stressed, this will release cortisol all the time, which can inhibit fat loss, which we talked about in one of our more recent podcasts.
Yeah, that was the things inhibiting your progress and your goals. So that actually is probably two podcasts ago, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a couple ago. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. So if you want to look at that, we talk about that in length.
And high cortisol levels can increase food intake and promote weight gain. When you're stressed out, like we said before on the other episode, you crave different types of food. You crave some of that sugary foods. And so eating a balanced diet, managing the stress, and getting adequate sleep really help normalize your cortisol production and take care of some of these detrimental hormone situations.
Yeah, and basically it's just preventing, because what happens is that cortisol kind of pushes a lot of other metabolic hormones and pushes them to the back seat or the back burner and kind of takes a precedent over that and can actually block some fat loss. So we get into the scientific explanation in that previous podcast, so you should really check that out.
Right, and tips for managing stress are things like walks, you know, taking an Epsom salt bath, watching some comedy at night, meditation. I've been trying to do more. Oh, like, funny story on meditation though. The other day I got out of the shower and I was kind of cold and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna meditate in bed. Mm-hmm. And I set my timer for 20 minutes and I just fell asleep. And I was like, this is a nap.
It's funny, I walked in the room and she jumped out of bed like she was in trouble. She was embarrassed that she fell asleep. Like, it's okay, you could take a nap, you know.
I was because, you know, I've been trying to meditate more and I'll set my timer and I'll kind of sit on the floor. And I was like, this is not really what I was trying to do, but I'm okay with it. I'm okay with that. But just don't ignore your stress levels. Find things that really relax you. You know, that's different for everyone. Maybe reading Game of Thrones isn't that relaxing for some people and relaxing for others.
You like more happy stories. And so that kind of stresses you out, doesn't it?
What's the one? Who's the author I'm really obsessed with? What's his name?
Dan Brown.
Yes, he's so good.
Yeah.
Check out Dan Brown if you want some thrillers at night, but it's not too stressful, I promise.
Yeah, and honestly, since we started doing those evening walks, my sleep has been better. I don't know if there's any connection with that.
I do think there's some connection because you usually skimp on that kind of stuff.
I do. So next we're going to talk about hormonal imbalances and addressing specific key hormones that are related to fat loss and body composition and all that kind of stuff. So most weight gain advice concentrates solely on the calories in, calories out method and only focuses on energy intake and energy expenditure, but they largely ignore hormonal signals and how they control and kind of dictate what happens to our body.
Right. I think also this is because they're not really paying attention to fat loss, you know, really emphasizing weight loss and not optimizing for fat loss and, you know, make sure you're maintaining a good amount of your muscle because you might still lose some weight. But is it really the healthiest, most optimal way?
Right. And I think it's, yeah, like you said, it's the difference between looking at weight loss versus a body composition change.
Yeah.
So first we're going to talk about is insulin. Like we talked about before, it is the fat storage hormone. So like we said before, you don't want to spike insulin for too long because fat burning hormones are shut down in the presence of insulin. And you have to keep in mind that all aspects of fat metabolism are greatly enhanced in the absence of insulin. So in order to keep insulin out of your blood, you're going to want to reduce carbs, avoid having protein with sugar at the same time. That's gonna spike it, because protein does spike insulin, especially excessive protein. More than 6 ounces, depending on the size of the person, is going to spike insulin for an individual.
That 12-ounce steak.
Hey, it's necessary. Lean protein. So protein that has no fat, because fat tends to buffer insulin. So extremely lean protein can raise your insulin more than, say, like a ribeye steak.
Fascinating. I didn't really think about that.
And eating too frequently can keep levels of insulin, because eating in and of itself does raise insulin levels a little bit. Depending on what you're eating, it's going to raise different levels. But nonetheless, it does raise. So just grazing constantly throughout the day, even if you're in a caloric deficit or caloric maintenance, you may not be optimizing fat loss like you would if you kind of time that out a little bit better with that nutrient timing that we were talking about. And so if you are insulin resistant, just keep in mind that you have 5 to 7 times more insulin than those that are insulin sensitive, all right? And it just doesn't, you don't know what to do with it. And so if you want to address that, you got to reduce your sugar intake, you know, cut any carbs, and increase your exercise. The more intense, the better. And you don't want to do it every day, but, you know, I would say try to go 4 times a week and increase in the level of intensity as you go. Start out easy. You don't want to immediately get sore and kill yourself right off the bat, but increase the level of intensity as you go on. And those are the best ways to lower insulin levels. It's just really focus on the timing of your carbs in the day too.
Right. So as you can see, he said reduce your sugar intake. The goal isn't to get to zero. That's not possible, really, overall. And again, look out for added sugar. So there's the natural sugar from fruit, which is fine in the right amount, but you don't want too much added sugar either. So reducing that overall number and reducing your overall carbohydrate number. But remember that vegetables also have carbs. So the goal is not zero sugar. It's not zero carbs.
Yeah. I mean, the more you balance out the sugar to fiber ratio is the best.
Yeah.
So next is estrogen. And we've talked about this in several podcasts. We had an entire podcast on hormones and balancing this out. So you can go look for that. But you really want to work on limiting the amount of xenoestrogens that are in your diet and detoxing them with things like green tea, cruciferous vegetables, curcumin. And, you know, in terms of limiting xenoestrogens in the environment, you know, we can give you some examples like
Like skipping the plastic bottles that you know, really using, you know, your glass bottle, using a filter at home that is not, you know, made of plastic. We have like a Berkey water filter. Also, you know, not buying foods that are wrapped in plastic, especially ones that you heat up. Or if you're using some, take it out of the plastic and heat it up on a plate or glass, really reduce the xenoestrogens that you're exposed to.
Right. And then you also have things like scented candles, perfumes, like anything scented that doesn't say phthalate free is going to have xenoestrogens in it. Also hygiene products, you know, your shampoo, your body wash, some face and leg gels for shaving, all that kind of stuff. If, you know, we talked about this before, but if it has like a methyl, butyl, heptyl prefix on the word, you can pretty much guarantee that it is paraben. And some of them would even say methyl paraben. Right, in terms of on the ingredients, so you can look through there. But since it's such a marketing tool now, most brands that are paraben free are going to say paraben free or phthalate free on the front. So
right, you can also look it up on that Think Dirty app. You can look it up on the EWG site.
Yeah,
I just got this face wash. It's called No BS Face Wash. I was so excited about it, and I looked it up on the EWG site, and it had like, so the lower the number, the better it is. It was like a number 2, which is really good. Like 1 to 2 is like in the sweet spot.
All right, so next on the list is testosterone. And you're going to want to manage 2 different ratios with this primarily, and that's your testosterone cortisol ratio and your testosterone estrogen ratio. And so mainly for guys, you know, I highly recommend a resveratrol supplement because you have this enzyme that converts testosterone to estrogen in the body, and it's called aromatase, and resveratrol can block that. So there's that. But if you want to go the natural route, you can obviously lifting heavy and high intensity training, but not too much to where you're overtraining. That'll raise testosterone levels. If you have excess body fat, that reduces HGH and increases, especially belly fat with estrogen levels. So you're going to want to reduce belly fat. You can try intermittent fasting and adequate sleep. And this is something I've been working on. Like, for instance, I think the Oura Ring that Amanda got me is like invaluable for tracking sleep in terms of keeping you just keeping you mindful on it, you know,
and accountable.
For instance, like, I know that as soon, like when mine broke, for instance, and I had to get mine replaced, which they're really good on, they just replace it for free because it wouldn't sync up with my new phone. So when I got my new one, my focus changed in terms of what I did to prepare for my sleep, what time I went to bed, and making sure that I was accountable getting to bed before 11 or by 11. So it really just, like you said, it made me more accountable. It made me think about it more. Just wearing it is kind of this reminder.
Right.
So to speak.
I also like it better than like a lot of the other ones out there because you don't have like another screen on your wrist. If you're not using it for a week, you just have a ring on. So there's nothing, you know, distracting about it. So yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite tools in our toolbox.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next hormone that you want to know about is leptin. And that's your satiety hormone that reduces appetite and makes you feel full. And there is such a thing called leptin resistance. So the same way that we can be insulin resistant, people can be leptin resistant. And that's where your body doesn't get that signal and subsequent reaction that it should from leptin. And so like you have one study that found leptin levels in obese patients were 4 times higher than those at normal weight. So keep that in mind. And to improve leptin sensitivity, you can avoid inflammatory foods and get anti-inflammatory foods. You can exercise regularly and try to add intensity to it if you don't currently train with intensity. Get adequate.
I do every now and then.
Yes, at minimum. Get adequate sleep. And there's also supplements that have been shown to be good, so like alpha-lipoic acid and fish oil. The next one you want to know about is ghrelin, which is your hunger hormone. And this also gives you like thirst signals as well. So sometimes when you think you're hungry, you're actually just thirsty. So, you know, we talk about this later on, but, you know, just make sure that you're getting enough water throughout the day and that those cravings aren't just coming from you being dehydrated.
Right. Nonetheless, you get that brain fog too. So drink your water.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you can improve ghrelin signals by eating plenty of protein and avoiding foods and beverages that are high in sugar. And that can help optimize those levels.
Right. Also drinking super sugary drinks. They don't really fill you up. You get that crash later. So you're messing with insulin. So those are like one of my first tips for, you know, getting to a better weight is to get rid of like those super sugary drinks. And that includes things like orange juice, you know, what you might think is a bit healthier. It's really not that much better.
Anytime I want anytime I drink orange juice, I just want more. I mean, that's really what it is.
It's so not satisfying. And yeah, part of that is it's lacking the fiber that you get from eating the whole orange.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So next is neuropeptide Y. And neuropeptide Y stimulates hunger, particularly during times of fasting and during stress. And you can help lower neuropeptide Y by eating plenty of protein and soluble fiber. Next hormone is glucagon-like peptide 1. And that's a hormone produced in your gut when nutrients enter the intestines. So GLP plays a major role in keeping your blood sugar levels stable and also makes you feel full. It can also increase weight loss by decreasing appetite. So in order to raise these levels, you want to consume a diet high in protein, leafy greens, fermented foods, anti-inflammatory foods, and also you can take a probiotic supplement, and there's been some studies to show that that helps as well. So last hormone that we're going to talk about is peptide YY, and it's another gut hormone that controls appetite. And in order to improve this, you want to try avoiding processed carbohydrates and eating plenty of protein and fiber. So you see a lot of a common denominator in terms of improving hormones is protein, fiber, reducing carbohydrate, and simple sugars.
Right, right. Some of our earlier tips kind of help take care of these issues. But it's nice to hear like about the different ones and you know, kind of get that repetition in your brain that you do need to follow some of these overall tips.
Mm-hmm.
So next we're talking about intermittent fasting. Now, intermittent fasting isn't necessarily for everyone, but it's great for optimizing hormones. You know, I'm sure some of the ones Chris talked about, but basically intermittent fasting changes hormone levels to help facilitate weight loss. In addition, it also lowers insulin and increases growth hormone levels, and it also increases norepinephrine, the fat burning hormone. IF is not only beneficial for weight loss, but it's also beneficial for overall health. So giving your digestive system that full break really helps optimize a lot of different hormones. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, if you use your intermittent fasting period to binge and just go over your calories, it's not going to help with fat loss, of course.
Yeah, you can still gain weight on it.
Absolutely. So it's not a magic bullet. It's just a helpful tool. And some people honestly just feel better eating in the style, right? So some people like absolutely swear by intermittent fasting. And some people, you know, need that multiple meals a day and, you know, like to eat in a little bit bigger window. So it really depends on the person. But I say try it out and you feel fantastic on it, then stick to it.
So you should really look up the different protocols for intermittent fasting, but most people go on a 16-hour fast and an 8-hour eating window. And next we have addressing gut health. And we've done two episodes completely talking about gut health in this. Yeah, part one and part two. One with just Amanda and I, another with Mary Pardee. And so and she broke it all down, and but we can go through some of the basics. And so your gut health has all different types of control over your body, and it's one of the main issues for health that you should be addressing. So to go through some of the bullet points with that is that you're going to want to eat plenty of fiber, soluble, insoluble, some resistant starch, all this stuff to help the gut bacteria propagate, grow, be diverse, all that kind of stuff. You want to address any discomfort in the gut. So if you have any intolerances or anything that's creating bloating, things like that, you're going to want to try to address that. Maybe you have some problems, some intolerances, maybe even a full-on allergy. So that's really important. You also have to deal with the possibility of intestinal permeability or leaky gut, which is a growing problem. There's more and more research coming out, even though there were some naysayers for some time. So if you have some issues with that, that can be a problem. But I highly recommend at some point to go look at those two podcasts, especially with Mary Pardee, because it's just a wealth of knowledge.
Absolutely. And you know how the saying goes, go with your gut.
Oh, man.
Do you love my cheesy jokes in this podcast, Chris?
Absolutely. Yeah, it breaks it up very nicely.
So it wouldn't be a podcast episode without talking about sleep. You know, it's going to be a tip on there every time. If you're not addressing it, put it on your list. As we've said time and time again, there are many hormonal and health benefits from getting adequate sleep. Also, lack of sleep alone can increase cravings, which will lead you to eat more calories. So simply that could get in the way of your fat loss goals. Also, what I found interesting was I was discussing with my friend the study that showed that people who slept less, like, yes, they still lost weight, but they lost a lot more muscle mass and less fat than people that are sleeping more like 8 hours plus. You're going to lose, you know, more fat versus, you know, just weight loss.
This was the study that they were looking at people in a caloric deficit, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, if you're in a caloric deficit, you'll still lose weight. So, again, you will lose weight, but what are you really optimizing for? So, you really want to put all that hard work to use and get that sleep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or take that meditation nap.
All right, next we want to talk about a couple tips and tricks, some things that didn't really require their own category, so we just kept them under this. So first is portion control. We talked about that. That's going to be one of your main resources and tools and tactics to get a really good idea about what your per meal caloric intake is.
Right.
All right. The next is a thing that most people don't know about, and that's taking the glutamine supplement to suppress sugar cravings. And you can do this about 30 to 45 minutes because that's about how much time it takes to achieve its peak effect. So if you know that you normally go binging, you know, 9 o'clock before bed or whatever, then, or maybe you do it like I do and you go to bed and you get up and you binge, drink about 10 grams. Now, the study that I posted in here had 30 grams in terms of that was their protocol, but, or you could do 10 grams and then wait a half hour and take another 10 grams, which some coaches will recommend. But I mean, glutamine has been shown through various studies to help different hormones that are related to this. I did have a whole breakdown for this, but we're starting to get into this a little bit of a lengthy time for this podcast. So I'm going to spare you the scientific jargon and you can just look up the study in the show notes and look at all the mechanisms involved in the way that this works. But in short, I will tell you this is that you have, like we said before, you have a certain amount of bacteria strains in your gut that specifically target carbs and sugar. And one of them is this strain called Streptococcus, which is under the class called Firmicutes of bacteria. And they produce this special protein that mimics hunger-relating hormones in your body. And like I said, they love carbs and sugar. And glutamine can actually reduce firmicutes in the body by balancing them out with another class of bacteria. And that balancing can actually decrease the amount of ghrelin and also decrease the amount of leptin-mimicking secretions that come from that firmicute class of bacteria. So that's really interesting. And I have, like, you know, maybe four studies to talk about that. So
wow,
you can
really
go through
cool.
there, but I don't want to really weigh you down with that. Also, glutamine has been shown to decrease the secretion of ghrelin, which, as we've discussed, plays an essential role in appetite. So when ghrelin is high, sugary and high-calorie foods become more appealing to us as opposed to when ghrelin is low. So this may be one of the key reasons why L-glutamine may reduce sugar cravings. But nonetheless, just go after the glutamine, see if it works for you. Take 10 grams at a time, maybe a little bit, 10 grams and then 10 grams a half hour later, and see if it works for you.
That's really interesting, though.
Right. And that whole breakdown I was showing you before is just another example of how willpower sometimes isn't enough. I mean, we're getting signals and triggers from our hormones and our gut bacteria to eat, even though we know it's counter to our goals. So that's one of those things where it's like I'm alleviating a little bit of the responsibility off of you right now. And so, like, you do have to understand that there are some times where our body is pushing you and pushing you towards certain actions that are going to be actually a detriment to your health.
Right.
So knowing these tips and tricks, getting ahead of it, knowing these what you call health hacks is I think they're beneficial.
I mean, anything that can give yourself a little bit of edge, especially, you know, if you're struggling a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Another tip here is taking what's called glucomannan. And it's a type of fiber that comes from the root of the konjac plant. And what's great about this is that the fiber actually just sits in your gut. And it's a good thing, though, because it's fermenting. It's giving the gut bacteria food, but it also makes you feel full. So it's a really good thing, and you can get it in two different forms. There's the Miracle or Shirataki noodles. And that's what they go by on the shelves. Or you can get them in supplement form. So I think that's a really good tip and little hack that you can do to kind of get ahead of it. Another one is eating spicy foods, and slightly spicier than you're used to, because you tend to just eat less. You're like, okay, I'm full. I'm done because I'd rather not go through the pain. So
I hate spicy food. I used to be able to do it. I don't know what happened. Now I'm like, I'm such a pansy, and Chris makes fun of me. He's like, He's like, come on now.
I wouldn't understand if it's medium, but she'll flip out with the mild. Just give me a break. All right. And last little tip is use smaller plates. Most people are used to eating off of those 10-inch diameter plates. And you don't need to fill that plate up to have a decent meal. So go down to your 8-inch plates, and that will actually be more proportionate to the size of your stomach.
Yeah, to tack on to that, you can also go for smaller size silverware. So I was in the drawer the other day, and I was like, should I go for the big spoon or the little spoon? And I was like, oh, if I go for the little spoon, you know, I'll take smaller bites, which will help with chewing and digestion, and it feels like you're almost eating more because you're taking a lot more bites than a giant spoonful.
Yeah, it takes you longer to eat it, so it gives your brain, you know, more time to feel full. I like that.
So moving on to another tip on this podcast is to train with weights or use some form of resistance. So it could be body weight exercises for now if, you know, you guys don't have weights at home currently. And yes, I'm talking to you ladies. Make sure you're doing some form of resistance training. Even if you love cardio, all that stuff, it's really important to mix that in for your overall health. And also adding more muscle will increase your energy expenditure. So that's a good thing. You know, you add more muscle, you can eat a little bit more, or it kind of helps with maybe the effects of your body. So, you know, slowing down the metabolism, if you put on more muscle, it's going to help make up for some of that.
Yeah, muscle takes a lot more energy to maintain in terms of a baseline caloric intake, like your basal metabolic rate.
So don't skip the weights, ladies. I've learned to really like it. And you can kind of shape your body in certain ways. So I really do enjoy it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and adding to that, because, you know, weight training and resistance training is anaerobic training. And so part of that is doing sprints, which we put under that category. And Amanda and I just did a sprint workout the other day, which is pretty brutal, huh?
Yeah, I can't keep up with you.
Yeah, it was 10 all out 30 second sprints with 45 second rests.
I think so.
Was it 40? Yeah, and it was brutal. Like the last three are pretty tough.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of sprint protocols, but just do interval training. You can do them, time sprints. Like I'm going to do 30 seconds on, you know, X amount of rest off, depending on your conditioning level. You can do 10 seconds on, you can do 100 meter sprints, 200, 400. You can do the ladders, a whole bunch of different things. We have a whole podcast on sprints. That's how much I believe in them and I advocate for them.
I mean, one of the most bang for your buck exercises.
Yeah.
So last tip on today's episode is to add more movement throughout your day to really break it up. And, you know, you're increasing your total energy expenditure, right? When you add more movement, whether that's, you know, doing push-ups in between working. We taped a ladder on our hallway floor. So like when we go to the bathroom, sometimes we'll do a couple ladder movements.
Like one of those agility ladders where you do footwork with, for football and soccer and things. So
Chris uses it a lot more than me, but I try to incorporate it some.
She's good.
Or, you know, you get on the phone and you go outside and you go for a walk. All those things will increase your energy expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we don't recommend like, you know, monitoring your calorie burn and then like adding that to your calories. You know, that's why, like Chris said in the beginning of the episode, it's like, you know, kind of using like more of a universal activity level. And then you can adjust depending on whether you see yourself hitting your goals. You know, if you have issues hitting your goals, then you can maybe adjust, but don't. Those calorie tracking apps are usually not MyFitnessPal, but the ones that track your calorie burn for exercise are usually not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful. Don't necessarily rely on that.
Yeah. I mean, you can track steps. I think steps is a good thing to track. I mean, I know that the Oura Ring does that, which I really like. And what I really like as well is when I'm sitting for longer than an hour, it just sends me a reminder on my phone of like, stretch your legs a little bit, stand up, which
get
I really
your butt
like
up.
Or you can, or what I used to do when I worked in a corporate office is that I had two different timers, or I had a timer that went off telling me two different things every hour. And that was posture and get up. And so it was like, if I wasn't using my standing desk, I would just get on my phone and just walk around, go to the kitchen in the office, go somewhere, get on a phone call instead of doing the phone call on your desk. All these different options is just, if you're in a sedentary job or sedentary lifestyle, set a reminder or keep it in mind for yourself to just get up and get some steps in every hour, and that'll break up those long bouts of sedentary activity.
Right. I mean, park farther away when you go to the grocery store, take the stairs when you're at home.
Oh man. There's so many times where I'm traveling through LAX and during the holidays, and there's one specific terminal where there's like two escalators on the side and then one center stairway, and you have lines and lines of escalators and the stairway is empty. And I'm like, you guys can go up 15 stairs. I know you can do it. I know you can do it. I don't care what time of day it is. I don't care that you have a backpack and a carry-on. Go up the goddamn stairs. So I mean,
exert yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like you can get a little bit of extra activity, and it could go a long way if you do a little bit every day.
Right. I have to remind myself of that too. I mean, now I do it a little bit more since we've been quarantined, but I would go to the gym and then I would be like, I am not walking at all today. Like, I went to the gym, I exerted myself. Now I can sit on the couch all day, and it's absolutely not the right mindset.
No, not at all.
So I really hope you found today's tips helpful. As you can see, they were very focused on nutrition earlier. So the whole like exercising, you know, over exercising a bad diet is really not a great method. It's not very healthy. You know, we also don't want you to feel like just because you have a treat, you need to like run 3 miles. Like that will create a very unhealthy, you know, lifestyle. So find the balance and, you know, really do focus on nutrition. You know, that's one of our biggest focus. And my biggest focus, my whole Instagram page is mostly nutrition with, you know, workouts on the story. So, I mean, do it all, but take the tips that work for you, you know, right now, and then add some of these other ones as you go.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We really hope you enjoyed it. We really hope it made a difference in your life. Let us know what other tips and tricks you'd like to hear on future episodes. You can DM me at MeowMikes or Chris at Chris Rocchio. We love chatting with you guys every week, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Yep. See you.
Bye.